Did you miss your chance to be radio's best friend? Well, you are not too late. Go to cjsffundrive.ca or text donate to 778-782-2573 now to make your donation to Fundrive 2024.
I'm Jesse Brown, and today we're talking about exactly how the airlines screwed Canadians out of the money that we paid them for flights that were canceled when the pandemic hit.
If they had happened in a European country, probably the police would have shown up at the houses or the offices of the airline executives and picked them up and arrested them on various charges of white-collar crime.
Charisse has the story in a minute. You got screwed. I'm sorry, but it's true. When the pandemic hit, billions of dollars were sitting in the bank accounts of Canada's airlines, all for flights that would never happen. So how much of that money was returned to us once those flights were canceled? And later, when the government bailed out the airlines with billions more in taxpayer dollars, on the condition that the airlines finally refund to Canadians what they owed us, how much of that money actually got back to us? Between the airlines and the government and the regulator, who was talking to who? And what kind of pressure was exerted? Until now, it's all been a mystery. But reporter Charisse Souterin has the receipts and the documents, which taken together give us the clearest picture so far of what happened and why Canadians were left holding the bag. Now, it might not surprise you to think that the airlines may have wanted to keep some of these documents a secret. But here's the twist. It's not the airlines who fought to keep these emails from the public. It was the CTA, the Canadian Transport Agency, who are the regulator, the watchdog agency that exists to protect consumers. Charisse has the story. Wait for it.
Travel has tanked with countries shutting down, and the entire global airline industry is in trouble. The Prime Minister still hasn't offered a bailout to Canada's airline sector.
With no end to the pandemic in sight, the airline industry is looking for a lifeline. At Air Canada, it can't get much worse with layoffs affecting 20,000 staff next month.
Jesse, do you remember COVID?
You know I do.
During COVID, did you have a flight that got canceled?
Charisse, I had my wife and I a family vacation planned, extensive plans, reservations, and a lot of excitement around a trip that we had booked for April 2020.
And so what happened?
We didn't go on that trip, I can tell you that. In the blur of memory, like, I remember stress. I remember not knowing. I remember waiting for, like, a refund on my credit card. I'm sure there were hours on the phone. I may have gotten, like, store credit, which would have let me mentally feel like I got satisfaction. I would have stopped chasing the airlines. But now that we're talking years later, I'm actually afraid to go back and look into it because, like, what if they gave me some, like, you know, the equivalent of, like, a gift card to the Keg that I never used, so now it's, like, a worthless piece of plastic? Is that how people's canceled flights got reimbursed?
Exactly. Like a gift card to the Keg, these expire in a short space of time.
So that's got to be a lot of uneaten steaks, figuratively. Do we know how much money people were able to use that they just didn't use because they let it lapse? And do we know, like, who kept that money? I guess the airlines kept the money?
That is a great question. And that brings us to someone who you've heard before on the show and on Commons, Gabor Lukash.
I remember him, yeah. The guy who fights the airlines.
We're joined now by air passenger rights advocate, Gabor Lukash.
He's been volunteering his time to fight for passenger rights and has filed more than 24 successful complaints with the Canadian Transportation Agency.
By night, He's a kind of superhero.
He's been called a Superman of the skies, a thorn in the side of Canada's airline industry. But if there's one thing to know about Gabor is that this guy has been dogged in filing regulatory complaints and even taking airlines to court over all kinds of minor and major infractions. And in terms of refunds, Gabor is not only well-versed in the rules, he may have helped establish them through case precedents. For example, there's
decision number 313-C-A-2013. Complaint by Gabor Lukács against Sunwing Airlines.
And also
decision number 344-C-A-2013. In the complaint by Gabor Lukács against Porter Airlines, Inc.
And finally
decision number 31-C-A-2014. In the complaint by Gabor Lukács against Porter Airlines, Inc.
So there's been three times Gabor has proven to the federal regulator that Canadians have a right to a refund if they purchase a flight, and that flight is cancelled for reasons outside of their control. In one of these cases, the CTA even refers to refunds as, quote, a fundamental right, which brings us to COVID. Because during the time when airlines were cancelling thousands of Canadians' flights due to COVID, they were also telling the Canadian public that they were allowed to just give flight credit or vouchers instead of giving back money through a refund. And if you go by case law, in the CTA's previous rulings on refunds, Canadians were supposed to get their money back. And to this day, many have not.
Okay, so, I mean, I think people are used to that when you want to return something, some places give you your money back, some places give you store credit. But when it comes to airline travel, the rules, Gabor says, are very clear, and they're backed up by court decision after court decision. If they don't give you the flight, they got to give you your money back.
It's not like returning a shirt to a store where, like, you got the shirt and then you just like kind of did, you kept it for too long and you
might be
a
mustard stain on it. I don't know. That
exactly.
Was there when I bought it. You
exactly.
Know.
This is like you never got the shirt.
Yeah.
So
give me my money.
Give you your money. So he actually estimates that at the time Canadians were getting vouchers instead of refunds, the value of that would have been about $3.7
billion. $3.7
billion
of air travel that Canadians had purchased. And then the airlines turn around and say, we'll give you an exchange for that.
And today in 2024, the airlines have given back a portion of that money, but some are still holding on to millions. And it begs the question, why were the airlines allowed to hang on to Canadians' money? It was COVID. People were struggling. Certainly not a time that anyone wants to be on the hook for hundreds or thousands of dollars in flights that never happened. Why were the airlines allowed to do this, and why didn't our airline regulator put a stop to it? Well, Gabor being Gabor, he took the CTA to court over this, which resulted in a fight over the release of information from the CTA and from Transport Canada.
The government was fighting us tooth and nail. Important information was blacked out about who was talking to whom, when. Some of the incriminating information that we later on discovered through the court proceeding was at this point redacted. They were refusing, they were objecting, and they were dragging things out for years and years.
But by the power of court orders and subpoenas, we now have a trove of documents. And they tell a story involving the airline industry, the credit card companies, and the government of Canada, who all appear to be pressuring the airline regulator to bend the rules. This is how Gabor described it to me.
Sure, what I want to tell you on this is that many of these things, if they had happened in a European country, probably the police would have shown up at the houses or the offices of the airline executives and picked them up and arrested them on various charges of white-collar crime.
If this situation happened in Europe, they would have arrested the executives.
And we can actually trace almost everything that happened from March 2020 all the way through the end of 2020, which influenced how this decision happened and how this money was taken from the pockets of Canadian consumers. We have to start with the CTA, the Canadian Transportation Agency. These are the guys who Gabor took to court.
What the heck even is the CTA?
So the Canadian Transportation Agency is a regulatory agency and they make judgments on complaints against airlines. Their rulings have similar weight to court judgments in Canadian law. When you make a complaint about transportation in Canada, the CTA is the one ruling on it. So if you were to complain in this moment in 2020, hey, I didn't get a refund, I got this voucher, that would go directly to the CTA, which they would then rule on. And the thing about the CTA is that they're supposed to be impartial, at an arm's length from the airline industry, and they have rules about not communicating with other bodies that could influence their decisions.
Their job is to enforce the rules. The rules are that we get refunds.
And in the documents that I have now, it seems like a lot of rules are being broken. And it all gets kicked off by this one email sent on March 18th, 2020. And it not only involves the airline industry, but the credit card companies as well. It's for a member of Transport Canada, and it's addressed to somebody at the CTA. And this is Gabor reading it out to me.
Air Transat are telling us that they are getting pressure from creditors who are pushing on the airlines for cash. They will request that we officially let them to provide vouchers to passengers instead of providing them cash, because they literally do not have enough cash to give refunds. Have you heard anything about this? Are you available to discuss?
Okay, to get this straight, according to this message, the credit card companies are pressuring the airlines for money due to what I assume is chargebacks people were doing when their flights weren't refunded. And so one of the airlines, Air Transat in this case, was asking the government to allow them to give vouchers instead of refunding people cash. And this is the government going right to the airline regulator to discuss this whole thing.
All right, hold on. That's the whole point of a credit card, or one of them anyhow, is that some insurance that if I purchase a service and I don't get the service, I can say, refund me the money. So now the credit card company is getting tons of people demanding their money back.
Yes, and most provinces have these things called statutory chargeback laws for when customers don't receive what they paid for. But the credit card companies at this point were facing massive amounts of chargebacks in the wake of all these COVID flight cancellations. And so they didn't want to be on the hook for all of that.
They, in turn, go to the airline, Air Transat, and say, this is your service that you're not providing people. We don't want to be left holding the bag for what you're doing. And then the airline, in turn, goes to Transport Canada and says, we don't have enough money to cover this for the credit card companies. And then Transport Canada goes to the watchdog and says, can you relax your rules about refunds and let them do vouchers instead?
Exactly.
And that's not supposed to happen.
We're seeing multiple emails being sent from Air Canada, Air Transat, WestJet, Swoop, directly to the CTA, asking them please issue the statement on vouchers so we don't have to pay back customers' cash. And we're seeing different members of the CTA being approached by government and industry. There are actually two staffers from Transport Canada who are having these separate side conversations with different members of the CTA. So one of those side conversations is between Air Transat's Senior Director of Government and Industry Affairs, who is repeatedly emailing the CTA's Senior Agency Director over the course of just a couple of days. And I'm going to quote from one of those emails. The Air Transat exec says, would you be able to provide a status update regarding your urgent request here under? Thanks again for your vital cooperation. And then the CTA member responds, assuring him they're looking into it.
So not only are they communicating directly, pressuring them directly, but asking them essentially to do PR for them, like you're going to be the ones to tell the public that they're getting a voucher and not a refund, and it's going to be more credible from you because you're the public's watchdog. So is that against the rules?
So under the CTA's code of conduct, it actually says quite explicitly, members shall not communicate with politicians or officials of other federal departments and agencies regarding a matter that is, was, or could be before the agency. Perhaps the most concerning of all is an email which references a meeting between the chairman of the CTA again, the deputy minister of transport, and the minister's chief of staff, all over the voucher issue. Then finally, on March 25th, 2020, the CTA publishes a statement on vouchers on their website. It talked about how passengers shouldn't simply be out of pocket for the cost of canceled flights, but also that airlines shouldn't be expected to take steps that could, quote, threaten their economic viability. They go on to say that an appropriate approach in the current context could be for airlines to provide vouchers or credits for future travel, as long as they don't expire too early. 24 months would be reasonable. And so almost immediately after that publishes, we see airlines and credit card companies responding to their customers, and they're pointing to the CTA statement as reason for not having to give refunds.
I understand everybody's interest in this except for the CTA. I understand that the credit card companies don't want to be the ones paying everybody back. They put the pressure on the airlines. The airlines say, well, we don't want to be the ones to pay everybody for these flights that we can't deliver. I understand them going to the government. They were saying, look, if we have to refund everybody these billions of dollars, we're going to go under. And there's not going to be air travel in Canada. We're not going to be able to service all these routes. So then that puts pressure on the government. So I understand the government saying, okay, we're going to bail you out here. We can relax the rules. We can put pressure on the watchdog. Everybody, I understand why they want to put pressure on the watchdog. Why would the watchdog give a shit? If the watchdog exists to say, F you, pay the consumer, that's what we're here for, to represent the consumer. Did the CTA ever explain themselves about why they failed to do that?
Members of the CTA in 2020 were brought into Parliament to answer questions about this. So this is MP Taylor Backratch asking questions of then CTA Chairman Scott Steiner in late 2020.
So an email from a policy advisor at Transport Canada to Member of Parliament Erskine Smith revealed that the CTA's members, vice chair and chair would have approved the statement on vouchers, which gave airlines the clearance to refuse refunds. Is this correct? That the members, the chair and the vice chair approved it?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure about that email. I haven't seen the email. It's not in front of me. The office of the Minister of Transport would not have been privy to the internal decision-making processes at the CTA.
Backrage also asked about the possibility of the CTA statement unfairly influencing the outcome of customer complaints over refunds.
The challenge here, Mr. Strainer, as I'm sure you can guess from this line of questioning, is that as a quasi-judicial body, the CTA is in a position to fairly and without prejudice adjudicate these complaints that have come in from air passengers. And this statement of vouchers, does it not prejudice that process? Because this very clearly sets out the outcome of those complaints related to refunds.
I want to give a very clear response to this question. Nothing in the non-binding statement on vouchers, which was issued in order to protect passengers from ending up with nothing at all as a result of this situation, in part because of the legislative gap that I've spoken about earlier, nothing in that non-binding statement in any way affected or affect the rights of anybody who brings a complaint before us. The Federal Court of Appeal has already recognized that that passengers' rights aren't affected. Right in the body of the statement, we said that every complaint would be considered on its merit, every complaint will be considered on its merit, impartially based on the evidence and the law.
So it is interesting to hear Strenner talk about the possibility of Canadians not getting anything at all. It's not really clear how close that was to a real possibility. I reached out to the CTA for further comment on all of this, and I received a response from their media team. They said that the CTA has safeguards in place to fulfill their function in an independent and impartial manner while engaging appropriately on a regular basis with government officials and industry stakeholders. Transport Canada spokesperson also responded to my questions, saying that the discussions that, quote, do not impact or hinder in any way the CTA's independence or arm's length relationship with Transport Canada, end quote. But I do want to go back to what Steiner said in Parliament, that the statement on vouchers wasn't binding. This was true, but my question is, did customers know that? We can actually see them getting emails from customers and messages and Facebook messages and tweets. Customers throughout 2020 reached out to the CTA being like, hey, I didn't get a refund. I got this voucher and I don't want a voucher. And the CTA would message them back saying, well, actually, we have this statement on vouchers and we've deemed it reasonable that airlines can just give you a voucher instead. So this whole thing had an effect of customers believing that this was some kind of real regulation or legislation that would allow airlines to not have to give a refund. What they didn't realize was that this is not a legislation.
So here you've got the CTA saying to people, we're really sorry, we wish we could do more for you, but have a look at this voucher thing. And the thing that they're referring people to is their own statement about vouchers, which they never had to give and shouldn't have been giving in the first place.
Exactly. And it's not binding.
So they're actually giving people a sense that there's no further recourse, and they're giving people a disincentive from pursuing legal action, which people actually still have the ability to pursue.
Exactly. So the documents also show that after pressure from what the CTA themselves refers to as a consumer advocate, they revamped their statement on vouchers in November 2020 to clarify that this was not binding.
Could that consumer advocate have been our friend Gabor?
In fact, we know for sure that it was him.
This is really interesting because now what they're doing is actively running interference for the airline industry, and it seems like they're participating in making this as complicated as possible for people to actually get their money back.
I think as a consumer, I'm looking at the statement, I would be super confused as to what it even meant.
So I've covered regulatory capture issues like at the CRTC, where the complaint was that the whole place is filled with former executives from the industry that it's supposed to be regulating. Is that the situation here? Is the CTA filled with, like, is it a revolving door where people from the travel industry, from the airlines go and they take a position at the CTA and then maybe they want to get hired back?
You're right. There's a lot of interconnections between CTA and Transport Canada, which is the agency they're supposed to be regulating. Also, we see people go from the CTA to the Privy Council, to other appointments within the government.
A revolving door with government. It's supposed to be arm's length, specifically for circumstances like this.
We actually did get in touch with one of the MPs who was in Parliament at that moment, MP Taylor Backratch of the NDP. And this is what he says about these correspondences.
You know, it's a pattern of behavior that really shows where their allegiances lie, that they're concerned, they seem preoccupied with the financial performance of the airlines and are willing to make policy decisions based on that, even when there are a lot of people with a fair bit of money at stake and, you know, looking for a government that has their backs. Comparatively, if you look at the United States, the federal government of the United States has taken a much stronger role when it comes to the behavior of airlines.
The United States government actually took Air Canada to court over this.
But for their U.S. flights, the U.S. Department of Transportation says refunds have taken too long. So after more than 6,000 consumer complaints, it's seeking a $25.5 million U.S. penalty for what it calls extreme delays.
They said not giving Americans refunds was contravention of American law. And what happened was that Air Canada ended up having to pay out a fine for this, $4.5 million U.S. dollars. Air Transat was also fined just over $500,000. So what Taylor is right, the regulation around airlines was stronger in the U.S. than it was in Canada at the time.
So when Air Canada treats American passengers this way, there are consequences and fines, but not when they treat Canadian passengers this way.
It seems that way. However, there was also pressure from Canadian consumers in general. People were pretty pissed about not getting a refund. And so at the end of 2020, the Canadian government proposes this support package to the airlines, who are actually suffering because of all the canceled flights. And the support package includes this stipulation that if airlines want to take this government money, they actually have to provide refunds instead of vouchers to Canadian customers.
The deal gives Air Canada access to about $5.9 billion, most of it in low-interest loans. About a quarter of it is supposed to target reimbursements. Now, giving that money back to consumers would have been a challenge for a company that's burning through reserves, has laid off more than 20,000 workers, and canceled about 95% of flights.
Transat AT, the owner of Air Transat, also took a support package of $700 million, and it came with similar rules.
That's a pretty great deal for an airline. We'll give you taxpayers' money if you agree to give some small portion of it back to the people who you sold tickets to for flights that never actually left. They're paying us back with their own money.
Exactly. And Air Canada didn't actually make this process easy for the customer. What they did was they set up a website where you would have to input your information, and then you had like a 3-month limit on applying for this refund.
Even getting the refund, you had to jump through hoops.
Exactly.
And do we know how many people did that?
There was a special fund, actually, for refunds. It was $1.6 billion given to Air Canada that was actually a special earmarked fund for giving Canadians their money back. Air Canada has spent about half of it. So to look into Air Canada's financials, I actually got in touch with Steve Hyland. He's the editor of The Deep Dive, a Canadian news website focusing on stocks. And he actually found something really interesting.
They were supposed to cap executive pay at $1 million. Now, if you go look up the CEO, Michael Rousseau's pay package, in 2021, he did receive $1 million salary plus share-based awards plus option-based awards. That works out to exactly $1 million. But then he also received $2.7 million in pension contributions. So his total compensation was actually not $1 million. It was $3.7 million.
And it's not just Air Canada's CEO, but it's also five other executives of Air Canada that received the $1 million plus pension contributions.
Which they were never supposed to get a dime beyond the million.
It seems, well, not in the spirit of the agreement. I reached out to Air Canada to find out more about how many customers in total got a refund and how many didn't. And all they said was that all eligible customers who requested a refund were refunded, and those who wanted a voucher obtained a voucher. But it doesn't quite address the issue of people who got a voucher but wouldn't have wanted one in the first place. I also did get a comment from Air Transat. They also didn't say how much they paid out in refunds, but their spokesperson did tell me that the money used for refunds remains owed to the government, accruing interest. They also maintain that they strictly adhered to Canada's air passenger protection regulations, which don't give a full picture of all of the rights customers might have under Canadian legislation.
Returning to the overall amount of money that transferred from Canadians' pockets into the airlines for trips they never went on, are we ever going to know this? Is there any way to estimate how much money the airlines kept from us? Is there any way to know how much money we basically just gifted to the airlines?
So we don't have clear numbers for all airlines, but I can give you my best guess. Because we know from Air Canada documents that by 2022, about 60% of eligible customers had requested and gotten a refund out of that government pot. That leaves about $800 million in vouchers that could have been refunds. And then if we estimate all other airlines having similar numbers, well, Jesse, we're looking at roughly $1 billion.
What about the threat that the airlines made to the government that unless they got a bailout, they would simply stop existing, stop servicing us? Some little airlines have gone under, but more specifically, what I'm curious about is this threat that, hey, if you don't bail us out, if you don't allow us to shortchange Canadians, we are going to stop servicing a lot of these routes, and people are just not going to be able to fly from smaller parts of Canada to the places that they need to go.
Under the deal, Air Canada also agrees to restore regional routes it suspended. Flights to places like Comox, BC, and Sydney, Nova Scotia have to be back up by June 1st. The deal also limits what Air Canada executives can make. The company's last CEO took home more than $11 million pre-pandemic. That isn't supposed to happen again for a while.
I would take that seriously if I was in government. That could be a huge catastrophe for the economy, for day-to-day citizens, for my reelectability. And maybe there's a case that could be made that they had to bail them out for that reason. So did the airlines make good on the promise of that? Did the airlines return to their pre-COVID levels in terms of like servicing the different regions of Canada?
They absolutely did not. And let me read to you from a story in the Canadian press last August. It says the number of direct flights plunged 49% for Sault Ste. Marie to Toronto, 41% for Regina to Calgary, and 100% for Quebec City, Rio Narada between May 2019 and May 2024. Driving between those cities would take at least 5 to 7 hours with zero stops. Meanwhile, fares on flights linking those cities rose 54%, 16%, and 173% respectively, according to Cirium.
We know this. It is much harder for us to get around Canada, especially when you're traveling from small place to small place. And some of these routes have just disappeared entirely. Others are just much more expensive than they ever were. Charisse, the only reason why you're able to tell us the story, once again, is because of these documents that were pried under duress from the CTA's hands in the process of Gabor fighting his lawsuit. So what happened with that lawsuit?
So just a couple of months ago, the case actually got thrown out. The judge ruled that it wasn't something they had jurisdiction over. But Gabor is Gabor. He is not easily deterred. So he recently filed an application to appeal that ruling. So while Gabor hasn't gotten the justice he was looking for yet, we did get these documents, and we got to find out what really happened here.
Thanks, Charisse. That is your Canada Land. I hope you enjoyed it. Stick around after the show is totally done. We're going to play you a finalist from our local correspondence audio competition. Listen, I know everybody is watching what's happening in the States very carefully. Tomorrow on our Politics Edition, Noor Azria talks to people who live in Canada who actually might have the power to decide who wins. There are hundreds of thousands of people who live in this country who have a vote in the American election, and some of them vote in battleground